Welcome to the first Lunch and Learn seminar for 2018. For those of you who might not know me, my name is Steph Roach and I work in the Corporate Responsibility team. I'll be your host for today's discussion about how leading brands are making an impact in communities. Every month we hold Lunch and Learn seminars on different topics where we talk about things such as mental health, social procurement, celebrating our LGBTI community. We see these events as really important conversations in an ongoing dialogue about how social and environmental issues are affecting us both at work, but in our life too. The safety of our people from both a physical and a mental health perspective is absolutely at the heart of POST. Today, in the event of an emergency, our closest exit is just out through the doors, and to the right, there's a stairwell, but a fire warden will come in if there's an alert tone and they'll help direct us to where we need to go safely. I'd like to invite my colleague, Jessie Fountain, to lead our safety moment for today's discussion.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jessie Fountain and I work in the marketing and community team in our strategic partnerships and programs team. And since I work in our digital inclusion space, I thought I'd take this opportunity today to discuss a few ways that we can keep ourselves and others safe when we're online. First of all, some statistics. Last year, people in Australia were scammed out of nearly $90 million, with over 160,000 reports of scams being made to the ACCC's Scam Watch. Since January this year alone, there have been over 10,000 reports of scams that people have become susceptible to, with losses of over $10 million. So these are concerning figures. So I thought I would outline three key actions that we could all do to help protect ourselves and others online. Number one is really obvious, and you know what I'm going to say. It's all about your passwords. Have strong passwords, don't share your passwords, and update your passwords often. Whilst we're often prompted at work regularly, perhaps annoyingly regularly to some, to update our passwords at work, how long has it been since you updated your personal banking password or your email password? And if you think about your email password, that one's particularly important because if you go to any other online account and then click, I forgot my password, that email prompt is sent through your own email account. So anyone with access to your email account can then access other accounts. So not to build distress, but it's a really important one to keep updated and protected. Number two, be critical of what you read that comes into your inbox. As the stats show, there's big bucks to be made by online scammers, and so these scammers are getting smarter. Scam emails impersonating institutions like your banking institution, power companies, or even Australia Post. These scam emails contain less typos and they look a lot more legitimate than they have in recent years. If you receive any unexpected correspondence from an institution or a supplier, assess it critically before you click on any of the links. If you're uncertain, go straight to the source and actually ask that institution directly via phone or via their website if they've contacted you, as opposed to clicking on something that you'll then regret. And if you receive any spam email to your work email address, you should forward it to our awesome information security team. The email address is secure@post@auspost.com.au. They'll be able to assess it and assist if required. And now finally, I'm sure many of you in the room receive hundreds, if not perhaps thousands, of emails a week and a month. So you are super familiar with what looks suspicious, what looks right, what emails you're expecting to get, and what might look a little bit odd. However, are there people in your life around you that are perhaps only recently learned how to use the internet and so are new to email or social media that might be more susceptible to these scams? Would your parents who are online know that they should be critical of suspicious emails? Do you have a neighbour, an aunt, or a cousin who is new to the internet who might be taken in by these scams? So here's action number three. Have a conversation with someone in your life who is not as digitally savvy as you guys all are about the risks of going online. Let them know that if they've been contacted by someone and they're a little bit suspicious, then they should talk through it with yourself or someone that they trust, especially if it relates to sharing money or personal information. The internet can connect, entertain, and enrich us, but let's keep ourselves and others safe while we're at it. Thank you.
Thanks, Jess. I certainly don't think I've changed my Hotmail password for a very long time, so I've got a task to do after today's session. So, What are some of the ways leading brands are making differences in communities? I think it's a really interesting topic today, because the ways in which brands contribute to community has changed significantly over the last 10 years. A decade ago, brands would typically give out a range of donations to an array of charities. Some may have been significant in value, but often there wasn't a lot of strategic intent in terms of the social issues being addressed. And the motivation for making the donations wasn't driven by any commercial incentive, but more inspired by a sense that brands should just simply give back to the community. If we fast forward to 2018, there has been a huge shift in that thinking. We now see brands identifying social issues that align with their core business and coming up with solutions because they know the outcomes will secure long-term commercial success too. So it's far more of a shared value approach. Before I introduce our panel members today, I'd like to show you a quick video about the Maya Give Registry.
It was really cool. I don't know where the stuff was donated from, but to be able to hop out of the shower and have these fluffy, fancy towels, in that moment, you don't feel very fancy, or you don't feel very deserving. And to be able to be supplied with towels, you're so grateful because you haven't done anything to deserve it. You haven't saved anyone's life. You've just rocked up from a shitty situation and you're asking everyone else to give you what you need, which isn't an easy thing to do. To be given something that's so luxurious. The situation was so crappy that to be able to be given something that someone normally in a much better life would have, it made you feel special.
I'd now like to invite our panel members and welcome them to come take a seat. Kate Driesen, who is the Community Relations Advisor at Maya. Our very own Nikki Tracy, Head of Community Relations, who has kindly stepped in for Andrea today, who is unwell. Thanks, Nikki. And Jess Patterson, who is the Founder and Director of Business As If Society Matters, a social impact consultancy. Please make our panel members welcome. Well, Kate, that was a very powerful video. Tell us about how the Give Registry came about.
I'll give you a microphone.
Hello.
Yes. I've watched that video so many times, and it still gets me. I guess it all started probably 18 months or 2 years ago. But predating that, as a business, Maya, we made a commitment to focus in on family violence as our cause or issue to have a voice on, and we entered into a number of partnerships with a couple of charities that were active in that space. Salvation Army was one of them. And we kind of tinkered around the edges with, how far can we go with this? What can we do to have a voice on the issue? How can we use our assets, our network to contribute meaningfully? And we undertook a few different initiatives. We first came in house and cleaned up, our internal policies around family violence, and we started to have a few little activations in store to kind of test the waters a little bit. And then after a while, we kind of realised actually we can have a bit of a say on this, and it's not going to have too much of a negative impact. And so our CEO at the time was highly engaged with what we were trying to achieve around family violence, and through discussions with him, we're like, how far can we push this? What else can we do? And he actually issued a a challenge to the advertising agency that we work very closely with. And he said, look, can you guys come up with something that's going to enable us to connect with our customers or engage with our customers on this issue and what we're trying to achieve, but also have a meaningful social impact? And they came up with this concept. And from there, it was really, well, you know, what can we do with this? How far can we take it? Working internally to pull the program together. You can imagine in store, we have, you know, point of sale. How do we bring all that in? And, you know, how do we market it in a really authentic way? And then, you know, it launched, and it's been running now for about 18 months.
Thank you. Nikki, from an Australia Post perspective, how are we making the future brighter for everyone, everywhere, every day?
Thanks, Steph. Well, I think you touched on it earlier when in 2010 we stopped and had a look at the way Australia Post was contributing to the community, and we were doing some amazing things in the community, but they didn't necessarily align with our business strategy and where we were heading as a business. We also know, to Steph's point, there's been a huge rise in the expectations of members of the community about the role that businesses have to play in not just making profits, but in actually contributing and being part of the community and contributing to its success. So, as a business, we feel very strongly that we are part of every community and we have a role in helping connect and make Australian communities thrive and prosper. So we have stepped back over the last couple of years and had a look at where are the places that Australia Post can make the best contribution to build prosperity in Australian communities, but also that there might be commercial opportunities for our business as well. And so for us, that has meant a bit of a pivot in the corporate responsibility strategy to align with the business strategy. So it's not surprising, given what Jess talked about, that one of the areas of focus for us is around digital inclusion and how do we support transforming our business and bringing the community along with us to build digital capability in the Australian community. We also have a role to play to make sure that we help connect everyone in Australia, no matter where you reside, no matter what your capabilities are online and offline, to connect people digitally and physically. And we also have an aspiration, and we're well on that journey to making sure that we are a sustainable organisation, both commercially, socially and environmentally.
Thanks, Nikki. So, Jess, you've worked with a range of brands to help them measure and report their social impact. How important is measurement? And can you tell us about how brands actually know that they're making a difference?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, we measure all other areas of our business, so why should community be any different? I think impact measurement is really important for three reasons. It's about being able to make sure that what you're doing with your program or your partnership is effective, that you're actually making a difference. Also, to actually build stronger relationships, because community investment isn't just done by one organisation alone, it's usually at least two partners. So it's about building stronger and more transparent relationships. And I guess thirdly, measurement's important because you can then communicate the results of what you're doing and really tell your social impact story. So I think of the two as being really interrelated. And I think what's really critical with measurement is that it's a conversation that you have at the start of a new program or partnership. And when you do that, then you're able to actually get a really clear vision for what you want to achieve. But so often I see brands that, you know, might give a donation or have kicked off a partnership or program, and a year down the track they say, hey, we gave $1 million to like World Vision. I wonder what the impact's been of that. And really at that stage, you should have a very clear theory of change in place. You should know what the benefits are that you're hoping to achieve, both from a business and a community perspective. So I think, that's really critical. And when you do that, then you are also creating stronger relationships and more transparent relationships, because I think people tend to shy away from certainly companies and brands saying, hey, what are we going to get out of this? But in reality, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, we want to reach more customers or we want to engage our people. And that's just as important as the social impact that we're striving to achieve as well. And so, yeah, and I guess the third point about being able to report results and communicate your impact is something that a lot of companies approach by using frameworks and tools. So the London Benchmarking Group is one that I know both Maya and Australia Post use, and that really helps them come up with a framework that's quite a simple input-output impact framework, and they can say, yes, we've got all these different programs and initiatives happening, but overall, this is how much we've given to the community this year in terms of the dollar value or maybe even the time that our employees have volunteered, and then what has that actually achieved? So have we been able to reach a number of people? And if so, what's the impact of that? Have they actually developed new skills? Has there been a change in their behaviour, for example? So I think, impact is or measurement is really important for those key reasons about relationships, making sure that you're being effective and being able to communicate results. Because at the end of the day, measurement is really a mechanism for better management. So I think, it's pretty critical.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jess. Kate, back to you. How did you manage to get buy-in from Maya's executive leadership team? And was there any issues or discussion around Maya's brand being associated with an issue like domestic violence?
Let me talk to the buy-in one first. Well, actually, they're both quite interrelated, aren't they? It was a big investment to embark on a program like this, and investments like this are so difficult to quantify. Jesse touched on measurement, and we really needed to delve very deeply from the outset into how were we going to measure this. You know, we're asking for a bit of money here because it wasn't budgeted for. We had to really find a way to, you know, demonstrate how is this going to generate value for our brand, how is it going to demonstrate value for the organisation, our customers, our employees. And while the program was, I guess, never intended to be a sales generating initiative, you know, at the end of the day there are sales involved, and we thought, well, how can we put this program out there in a way that is going to, I guess, behave as a mechanism for additional trade or reinforce, you know, why our customers are already shopping with us. So we really wanted to move towards how does it reinforce our brand strategy, you know, which is to sell merchandise at the end of the day. And so once we were able to really figure out how it aligned with what we were trying to achieve with our brand strategy, our customer strategies, and our people strategies, then we were able to really sort of get that buy-in at the executive level. You know, the business case had to be watertight. And on the point of family violence putting that out there, that wasn't an easy sell. I have to say, you know, going back a couple of years ago when I first introduced, this is our new framework, this is what it's going to look like. There are a lot of gulps, and this was before Rosie Batty was even Australian of the Year, and nobody was talking about it. Media wasn't reporting on it. We didn't have the language even so much to talk about family violence. And of course there was, but what about the men? You didn't want to alienate male customers. We didn't want to alienate anybody who felt that we should be focusing on all forms of violence instead of specifically family violence or domestic violence. So again, it all came back to how does it align with who our customers are, what issues are impacting them, and we did a fair bit of research to understand what that was, and we had a good understanding of what social issues were impacting our own people. We're 75% female workforce and probably about 75% female customers as well. So it was something that mattered to them, and so then it mattered to the business.
Thanks, Kate. It's such a powerful initiative, and I still, anytime I watch that video, it gives me goosebumps, and I think it's amazing to see Maya get behind it and so early on. Nikki, back to you. So the community team has three shared value domains: social inclusion, digital participation, and the circular economy. I know that you're particularly passionate about social inclusion. Can you tell us a bit more about Inclusive Australia and why social inclusion is so relevant to Australia Post?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I guess to Kate's point, you know, what matters to our workforce and the community is what needs to matter for to us as an organisation. And as an organisation that has over 163 nationalities represented in our workforce, and as an organisation that is in nearly every community across Australia, you know, we're passionate about making sure that we can remain a diverse workforce and a socially inclusive organisation to work for. So around 2 years ago, we did a reach out to the not-for-profit community, to our customers and to the community, and talked to them about what topics or what areas in society did they feel that Australia Post was best placed to make a contribution and to make a step change in. And two areas came back overwhelmingly as areas that we should focus on in the shared value space. One was around digital inclusion and digital participation, which we've touched on. And the other was around our role in helping champion social inclusion. What we learnt by speaking to so many different groups across Australia is that social exclusion is one of the major issues facing Australia today. We've learned that more and more Australians are retreating into their homes and becoming more socially isolated. We've learned that more and more Australians are feeling less connected to their families, their friends, and the broader community. And we learned that this is a huge problem. So we came back in and we thought, well, what is the role and what can Australia do to actually help increase social inclusion? We set up a working group with a few organisations that work in this area and government groups, and we did some research and we really looked at what was already happening in this space and who was working in this space and who was kicking goals in this space. And we learned that there were a huge amount of great organisations and particularly not-for-profits working in this space. But what we learnt were that most of them were focused on a particular audience, so the homeless community, LGBTI, people with a disability, and that there was not really an overriding collaboration between these organisations, and they didn't come together often to share and to push this agenda forward as a group. So we then connected to more than 120 organisations and government agencies and said, we think that the role that Australia Post can play is in helping bring these different groups together and collaborate and raise public awareness around the importance of social inclusion and how it helps build healthy and vibrant communities. And we were told that there was resounding support for this role for Australia Post, and an organisation that's separate from Australia Post was set up, and it's called Inclusive Australia. Australia Post is one of the founding members of Inclusive Australia, and we have put a lot of resources over the last couple of years from a people perspective, and Sarah Rush is sitting here. She and Chris have really led the setup of Inclusive Australia as an organisation and led this group of 120 organisations. It's sort of everyone from the Scanlon Foundation to Facebook and Google and media agencies in helping bring these groups together to collaborate to say, what are we as individual organisations and what are we as a group going to do to build a more inclusive Australia? So the goal of Inclusive Australia is to achieve an Australia where everyone is valued, despite your country of origin, your gender, your sexuality, your race, or any other type of difference. And IA as a group will focus on sort of three areas. We'll focus on providing research for all of the different organisations that are working and wanting to make change in this space. We will provide measurement and evaluation, and we've just completed the first social inclusion index in conjunction with Monash University that sets a real baseline of where is social inclusion or exclusion at in Australian society at the moment. And every year we will redo that inclusion index to see how the issue has changed and move forward. And the third piece is really around Inclusive Australia will champion a huge national public awareness campaign that will launch in about the middle of the year. And at that point in time, we'll be asking CEOs and CMOs of that 120 organisations and beyond to make public commitments around what they as organisations are going to do to build inclusivity in Australia. So from an Australia Post perspective, we will be making our own commitments as an organisation of what we will do to champion the change. So it's going to take a long time. There is a lot of, and as I mentioned, an ever increasing amount of exclusion in our communities. So this is not something that's going to change overnight. This is a movement that will probably take a generation to change. But you know, I feel very proud being part of a team that is taking on such a humongous issue for our society and really leading the charge as an organisation in trying to address it.
Thanks, Nikki. What an amazing initiative. I have one final question for Jess, and then I'm going to hand over to the audience. So please get your thinking caps on if there's any questions that you'd like to ask of our panel today. Jess, in addition to measurement, how can brands tell their social impact story?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, actually, because I think quite often we get caught up focusing on capturing the data, when in reality it's the qualitative stories that really reach people. You know, clearly on the one hand it's important to have measurement so that you can make sure that your program's effective, you can create stronger relationships, you can communicate that. But it's being able to translate that, I guess, into stories that people can understand. I think what we saw earlier is a brilliant example of a social impact story, or sharing Maya's story with that video in the beginning, particularly because it put you inside the shoes of that woman. And if you didn't know anything about family and domestic violence when before you watched it, you certainly came out the other side really getting a sense for what that person's experience was like. So I think that that's an incredible example. Certainly video is the way to go, from my opinion. And I tend to think of three ingredients that make a really strong social impact story through video. So the first is really about celebrating people. So it's in line with what Maya did, really. It's about telling the story of the people that you're impacting and doing that in their words if you can. The second thing is about using really simple metrics, because data really can add a lot of value to your story, but it just needs to be, you know, simple and accessible. And then thirdly, yeah, it's really about making it relatable. So I think the brands that get it right are the ones that make their content really relevant to the audience. Because if people are, feel that, you know, they are affected by your story, or they someone they care about is affected by the story, they're much more likely to engage with you. So they're kind of my top three points about making an engaging, you know, social impact story.
Yeah. Thanks, Jess. I'd now like to open up to the audience. Is anyone got any questions that they'd like to ask? Can I just grab a microphone? Any questions at all?
This question could be to, I guess, any of the panellists. Are there any sort of best cases, maybe even out of our own realms, of what you would admire in this sort of space, where there's good examples that we could learn from and I guess sort of share with the group?
One thing I would just say is I'm a real advocate for the concept of shared value, which is kind of gets bounced around as a term that could mean mutually beneficial, but it's actually a concept that these Harvard professors came up with, and it's about partnerships where a company can actually use their core business and really leverage that to address a social need. So it's not saying this is our responsibility to, you know, give back to the community. It's like there's an opportunity for us that could be a commercial opportunity. So one of the ones that comes to mind is probably people have heard of Amy's Safe Drivers program. So that's where they give free driving lessons, I think a handful of free driving lessons to people that have just got their license. And what they found through doing that is they had far less claims. So it had a direct impact on the business, but at the same time was actually stopping, you know, crashes and that kind of thing. So that's kind of the way that I think a lot of organisations are going. And certainly with Myers, it's about, well, what do we have? What's our core business and how can we apply that to a social issue?
Just got another example, the one that really resonates with me, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the shared value concept is when the societal problem and the business opportunity completely intersect. And one that always comes to my mind is Unilever. The societal problem was that women had no employment, and the business problem was that Unilever couldn't get certain products into certain parts of the market because they were in areas demographically where there were, or geographically where there were supermarkets or stores or anything. So they found a way to, through local business partners or local charity partners on the ground, is get the women trained up and give them loans so that they can actually purchase products and go on and sell them in the way that they do sell, which is door to door. So giving women employment, empowering women, and themselves bringing their products to market. So sort of that win-win situation.
Yeah, and probably a slightly similar one, and from a company that I worked for a number of years. The Body Shop was, which is a cosmetics retailer, was one of the first to bring on board fair trade ingredients in its product. And again, it was a need for certain ingredients from a moisturising perspective, such as shea nuts, and not being able to have enough of a supply chain. And so the business worked with women in communities in Africa who, again, were finding it difficult to find employment and contribute to the family and provide education to their children. So helping them set up their own businesses and sell their product to initially the Body Shop, and then the Body Shop really took on the responsibility to say, we don't want these women and these businesses to be beholden to us if this product doesn't sell for us and we don't have a market for us. So what's our role in the cosmetics and toiletries industry of giving these women access to competitors in the same industry to ensure that they have a sustainable income and not relying on one organisation?
Thank you, some great examples. Any more questions from the audience?
Hi, I was just wondering what role that you see the government playing and governing bodies playing in this space.
I guess we've talked a little bit about the concept of shared value and the role that, you know, the concept of shared value is that no one organisation or part of government can solve some of these big systemic societal issues. And so if I look to Inclusive Australia, we are absolutely working in partnership with government agencies as part of Inclusive Australia, because I think we're at a point now with some of these huge societal issues that unless there is a partnership, the issue cannot be solved. So in all of the shared value initiatives that Australia Post works on, we have alliances that include other corporates, the not-for-profit sector, and the government sector, because I think we all recognise no one's going to solve this on their own.
The other thing I'd just say there is the Sustainable Development Goals are a really important step forward that Australia Post is really championing and really a leader domestically. And that's a set of goals that the United Nations has developed to kind of, well, they're around several things. Some of them are up here, you know, poverty and even innovation and gender equality. And they're really creating a roadmap that not only businesses but governments and individuals can look to really put the world on a sustainable pathway into 2030. So I think that's another example of, you know, a really collaborative approach.
Thank you. Any final questions? Yep, great.
I guess my question would be to Kate as well as Nikki. Businesses change management, and we've got Christine Holgate on board, as well as Myers going through a bit of a cabinet management reshuffle. How do you ensure the continuity of your program that you have put forward? How do you, I heard Kate talk about buy-in, and just to ensure that the program is continued?
It's a great question, and I think that's why we took a real different approach to our framework a couple of years ago, because in the past we were very much this checkbook philanthropy, so whatever the flavour of the month was, then that's sort of where the funding would go, and it's not sustainable, certainly in a market like, well, retail where we are, and Australia Post where you guys are. It's really important that the program is integrated as much as possible in the business strategy, so it needs to be complementing or supporting those other strategies for it to be relevant. And I think for as long as it's demonstrating impact, so hence the measurement is so important. But I think for as long as the more integrated it can become in whether it's business as usual or supporting the marketing strategies or the business strategies or brand, then that's how it's less vulnerable to budget cuts or to management changes in structure.
Yeah, I would just echo everything Kate said, and maybe put it slightly more bluntly, is there's got to be a commercial return if you want these programs to stay as businesses evolve and strategies ebb and flow. There needs to be a commerciality to doing good. And that might, in the case of Australia Post and something like digital participation, be a pretty easy link around our products and services, and the more Australians that are digitally literate, the more products and services we're able to sell for them. With something like Inclusive Australia and social inclusion, we win if Australian communities are connected and prosper. It's not quite so straightforward, but if you look at our workforce and the need for us to have such a diverse workforce given the breadth of our business across the country, there is an absolute commercial imperative to our workforce feeling included and celebrated. It leads to great empowerment of our workforce. So, yeah, it's got to be commercial. Otherwise, it most likely won't stay in the portfolio.
Thank you. Any last questions? Yep.
You spoke about the balance of the workforce, and I'm just wondering how you balance the choice of what topics you choose to represent from a branding point of view and the cultures of the workforce that we represent. How do you sort of find that balance, I guess?
So let me rephrase that to see if this is the right question. So how did we land on the areas that we focus on? Yeah. Yeah, it is a fine balance. I guess, if you think back to the period we've just gone through with the postal vote and, our workforce being in large part required to deliver the postal vote on marriage equality, our role very clearly there was around making sure that people understood that this was the role of the organisation to deliver the letters, and One of our values is respecting everyone. So it's, I guess, recognising that not everyone in a diverse workplace or a diverse country like we have will think and feel the same, but it is important to respect the views of others. So it is challenging. In terms of how we landed on the sort of the three shared value spaces that we're focused on from an Australia Post perspective, the other two, similarly to the Inclusive Australia piece of work, there was a lot of outreach into the not-for-profit government and sort of leader sector to say, where are the big systemic issues going to be for our society in 10, 20 years' time? What, if any, role is there for Australia Post to play in helping solve for that? Because if Australia Post solves for it, then as a business, our sustainability is maintained. So, there were other topics that we did look at initially to focus on, but we felt these were the ones where we could best execute a change and, to my point earlier, drive a commercial opportunity for Australia Post.
Thank you. I'd now like to invite Monique Halliday from the Environment team up to share a really exciting opportunity with you all.
Thanks, Steph, and thank you. It's so great to see so many different faces here. So I work in the Environment team. We've got our CR team. We live and breathe this stuff every day, but I think what's great about these sessions is it opens up all of that work to everybody else across the business. And I was lucky enough about 3 years ago with Steve Hansen, who's here in procurement, that's where Steve works, to take part in a leadership program called the Centre for Sustainability Leadership Fellowship. And we both undertook an eight-month course, which actually was about delivering more sustainable outcomes, influencing and driving sort of a better future, hence the name Future Makers. And what we've heard here today is that we're living in a world where we require different skills to solve these new problems that we all face. So we are here today, we're going to be out the back there as you leave, and applications are sort of closing in the next fortnight for the fellowship program. We can talk to you about how you can talk to your manager for professional development support, i.e. some finance backing to do the course. But it really focuses on negotiation, systems thinking, design thinking, leadership, communication, engagement, all of those skills that you need to be able to deliver change, whether that's in your everyday or whether sustainability is as a theme sort of interests you. But we had an amazing experience. It certainly was life-changing in terms of reevaluating your place in the world and being able to go out and drive change in whatever field that may be that you're in. Steve has a huge focus on social procurement. So all of the social procurement programs that you hear about, he's always involved in those, along with Steph as well, but he works in procurement in the business. So while it sounds like an unlikely match, it was an amazing sort of opportunity for us both and a great course to sort of undertake. So if it's something that you've been thinking about, come and chat to us, no pressure at all, or you can email us at environment@auspost.com.au and at csl.org.au is the website. So thank you, Steph. That's my ad. I'll let you go.
Thanks, Mon. If you do have any interest or some questions, I encourage you to go have a chat to Steve and Mon just to see what their experience was like, because it sounds like a pretty amazing one. So in wrapping up, for the third year, our AGM and COO of e-commerce delivery, Bob Black, is raising awareness around food hunger and around food waste and hunger through OzHarvest CEO Cook-Off. So he has a very audacious target of raising $10,000 and is really keen to hit this. So today he's provided some cupcakes for you to eat on your way out and encourages you to have a gold coin donation, but knowing that it was a little bit last minute and you mightn't have anything in your pocket, to Google CEO Cook-Off and then to find Bob's profile and to make a donation. I think he's about halfway there and is really keen for your support. So thank you everyone for joining us today, particularly for coming over to the Stanford in the last minute. It's really, so good to see that you've all made the effort. A huge thank you to our panel. We really appreciate you taking out the time and coming and sharing all of your knowledge with us. If you do have any feedback on today's session or ideas for future topics, please email us. We're really keen to keep you engaged and to talk about things that are relevant and of interest to you. And that's at corporateresponsibility@auspost.com.au. So thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.